do we build the wall? My children, why do we build the wall?
Why do we build the wall? We build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
How does the wall keep us free? My children, how does the wall keep us free?
How does the wall keep us free? The wall keeps out the enemy, and we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
Who do we call the enemy? My children, my children. Who do we call the enemy?
Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
Because we have and they have not. Because they want what we have got.
Because we have and they have not. Because they want what we have got. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
What do we have that they should want? My children, my children. What do we have that they should want?
What do we have that they should want? We have a wall to work upon. We have work and they have none. And our work is never done. My children, my children. And the war is never won. The enemy.
That's why we build the wall.
We build the wall to keep us free. We build the wall to keep us free.
And that was Why We Build the Wall from Hadestown, a musical, recent musical, which I like. Hope you like it too. So there is this recall election being pushed, I should say petitions being circulated in order to create a recall election in which 51% can turn out Glover and Crone. But then, a small minority, 20%, 25% less, the person who gets the most votes, but Crone and Glover can't run, will win. It's a setup for the right-wing forces, from my perspective, even more anti-homeless forces than there are those that are on the city council now. Although, it's kind of hard to beat what we got going now. Will be then put in place of Crone and Glover. So there's been a more recent pushback by the Crone and Glover supporters, who previously had used this ridiculous policy of keeping a low profile and trying not to offend anyone. This is the standard pseudo-progressive stance that's been adopted for decades in Santa Cruz, whether it's with the earlier SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network people, or the Don Lane supporters. It's encouraging the folks to the council members to pull in their horns, not do anything that would offend people, tread lightly, not say a word while this so-called investigation was wasting time and money. And essentially, it was being used as a pretext to delay any kind of meaningful activity or just to eliminate it or bury it on the very issues that Glover, at least, with Crone's support, and to some extent Brown's, had brought up as far away and as early as January of this year. And we're talking transitional encampments, a reexamination of homeless, anti-homeless ordinances, reopening services like bathrooms, a whole series of initiatives which were undertaken in consultation with a lot of homeless advocates. Essentially long-delayed movements toward a partial alleviation of the pressure is certainly not a solution to homelessness. You got to give homes to deal with homelessness, and that ain't happening. No matter how many times you change your name, you know, now the new group is called Homelessness. Housing Matters is the new wording for bring us more money and we will provide it to a select group of folks that we provide meals to twice a day, after having turned away the broader homeless population. That was the original reason that this whole facility was set up, was to provide meals for folks out what was called Free Meal, and then the Homeless Community Resource Center, and then the Homeless Services Center, which I then took to calling because of its, well, the reality of what it provided and didn't provide, the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And now it's called Housing Matters. Sounds like they're kind of jumping around a lot with their wording, but they don't reveal their budget. I suppose you can find it if you use appropriate Public Records Act requests, although it's a private agency, so I'm not entirely sure. I do know that repeated requests to Phil Kramer to get that budget and make it public have been denied, and similarly to his underlings. So what's being hidden here? I mean, they've got great signs out front, 700, 800 housed in 7 years of the, I don't know, how many thousands of people who've become homeless in Santa Cruz during that time. Anyway, there have actually been a few articles, one particularly that I'm looking at in the Good Times, which strikes back at the essentially anti-Glover, anti-Crone perspective by Jacob Pierce, where he put out one article, but he never put out part two of that article, I don't think. Maybe I missed it. But I haven't seen it in the Good Times. This story, I'll read it. The Trouble with Your Article claims of bullying and misbehavior in Santa Cruz's City Hall, August 28th, Good Times, is its focus on unproven and difficult-to-measure allegations of misconduct. Verbal interactions in which one person alleges misconduct can be used as a way to diminish one's political opponent, used as a cover for political differences. It serves as a distraction from focusing on the real issues. I fear this is what might be the case in the campaign against Glover and Crone. Of course, it is the case. And what's the problem with this article and this writer is he doesn't get down to the specifics of the kinds of measures that were specifically shanghaied and dumped by the manipulations, the agenda manipulations of Mayor Watkins. That's Alan Fisher writing. Otherwise, you know, the letter is good insofar as it goes. It just doesn't go really to the core of things, which you have to listen to this show to get, or at least that's one way to get into it. Your article, that is to say, the article that was written by Jacob Pierce, seems designed to help the efforts of those who want to recall Glover and Crone. The four-month investigation did not substantiate 11 of the accusations, including any intimations of gender bias. It did conclude that Councilmember Crone made an audible, sarcastic laugh that offended a staff person, and that Councilmember Glover did have an uncomfortable interchange with another council member over the scheduling of a room. That was Myers, Councilmember Myers. The investigator's most potent finding led to his recommendation that council members should avoid making public accusations of misconduct or bad faith against one another and against city staff without first privately and internally addressing these concerns and attempting conflict resolution and rectification when possible. This advice was directed squarely at the mayor, I'm not quite sure it should have been, but I'm not sure if it was, whose public accusations in February touched off the investigation that cost the city $18,000 and set a divisive tone for future council relations. It'd be nice if they made a little video about the various kinds of activities Watkins has been engaged in, the agenda manipulations she's used just blithely and with no particular concern about what she's doing. She, of course, has denied progressives access to the agenda generally. When they've attempted to actually force her to put items on the agenda by bringing it up at city council and getting four votes, she has moved around that particular agenda, adding section to a more difficult spot to access it, and then slid past it when the time came up. And because Glover and Crone are nervous about being considered rude, they haven't been challenging this policy. And I would encourage people to go to Glover's meeting tomorrow. He has an agenda-setting meeting at 5:30 at City Hall. It's not in the main council chambers. It's rather in a side room. If you're approaching from the library directly across the street, you go to your right, what would be the city council offices, and you'll find it in the room directly to the right of the main entranceway there. And it's available to be, it's open to the public from 5:30 to 7. And I encourage folks to chat there. I'm hoping to be able to post the audio of that meeting. I was told the last time not to audio it by Councilmember Glover because he feared it would inhibit people at the meeting, and I very reluctantly agreed to that. I told him that this time I don't know if I'm going to agree because I think it shuts down the media, and also it's a public meeting and it should not be shut off from the public or even the public that wasn't able to attend. And people can always have private conferences with Glover if they need to. In fact, but one of the concerns I've often had and urged Mayor Watkins and previous mayors to do is to make their meetings as public as possible. In fact, that's what I'd hoped that Councilmember Glover has been working for. And I'm hoping that we can resolve this little bump in the road. I have recorded his past meetings. If you want to find them, you can find them on the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and you'll find them under the last and latest shows section, where you also find the latest shows, such as the one you're listening to, archived there as well. Continuing with this good time story by Alan Fisher, at the same time, it is heartening to look at the council accomplishments since the new council formed in January. Our new council has continued to make steady progress on a range of issues, large and small, with most actions requiring split votes. Now, this kind of intimates in the fact that what has really been the real case throughout the council session since the new council members got seated last November, that there has been a severe division on the council, and the old guard is fighting successfully, tooth and nail, to maintain it and the staff's dominance at the city council, which means essentially shoving the homeless as far away from visibility, services, and Santa Cruz as possible, but maintaining a fluffy appearance of some kind of actual progress, or at least discussion about progress, or discussion about creating a committee to consider actual progress. That's the CATCH committee, the community of City Council's Community Advisory Committee on Homelessness, which is another one of these. We aren't going to act on anything actual or real, like reopening bathrooms at night, or reopening the Loudon Nelson bathroom closed through the bigotry of Izeth Ray, or setting up a procedure by which private agencies can establish transitional campgrounds, or requiring the police department to stop harassing homeless people for essentially being in public places when they get a complaint from some neighbor or business that doesn't like them there, unless there's an actual public health or safety criminal violation, and not the kinds of phony laws that were cooked up with the assistance of the police department that they've been using to pad their arrest and their citation statistics for the last decade or more, and to inflate their budgets. This is also now, of course, notably true of Parks and Rec. So what's really happening at City Council is a division, a fundamental, serious division, which kind of represents a class division in the society here in Santa Cruz. I mean, it was seen most notoriously with the rent control issue, where a rent control majority was elected at City Council at the same time as heavy money defeated a rent control, local rent control measure, Measure M. And the majority was split away, with Vice Mayor Justin Cummings being lured off into the Cynthia Matthews, Donna Myers, Martine Watkins faction. It's hard to say what did that to Justin Cummings. He has so far declined to meet with me, or at least he hasn't responded to my requests for meeting. When he did meet, I was at one meeting with him with a bunch of people, and he blamed the county and said the reason he was closing the Ross camp after he's saying he wouldn't until there was adequate housing, which he seemed to acknowledge there wasn't, but he said he wanted to give the staff a chance to show there was adequate housing, and then you could point to it and say, hey, there wasn't. But when people did afterward, all he did was create a committee to talk about it 4 months later and consider transitional encampments 8 months later. Well, it was supposed to be 4 months later. Now it's 8 months later. And all kinds of funny business has happened. A Delaware Street attempt to essentially get the folks out in Delaware who are parking in their RV vehicles out there anyway, leave them alone, without, instead of just bogus enforcement of the 72-hour law. That was turned into a rent-a-mob, although that's not the proper way to put it. I would say rather it is a inflame-a-mob group that came down, pushed by the NIMBYs who have been running City Council and the public dialogue around homelessness for the last 10 years here in Santa Cruz. Well, the last 30 years, really, but the extreme edge of that one, the Take Back Santa Cruz types, who actually got people elected to the Santa Cruz City Council, such as Hillary Bryant and Lynn Robinson, Rochelle Naroyan, and so forth. Anyway, what we got is a class division on the council, and it seems to me that you got to acknowledge it, and you support one side or the other, really. It's always very nice to talk about love and peace as some people I like even do, like Lyon, when he gives these fellow named Lyon speaks at City Council. But when the mayor tells him, turn around and address the council, he turns right around and, yes, sir, yes, no, yes, sir, three bags full. And that's too bad as far as I'm concerned. When you have such a division on the council, you have to acknowledge it and be very specific about what it means in terms of each piece of legislation that comes up or that doesn't come up because it's being buried by Watkins and Bernal. And misleading information from Susie O'Hara, which you heard about, at least referenced by Alicia Cole earlier in this show. And then we have Alan Fisher. He talks about the so-called accomplishments of City Council. Environment endorsed the Green New Deal. The resolution got a 7-0 vote, but no teeth. Well, at least he says that. Transportation, bus passes, and jump bike credit will be provided for all downtown workers. Also, new city vehicles will be electric. Am I supposed to jump up and down at that? I mean, sorry. Homelessness, secured funding for a future 24/7 homeless facility and day center. We've been hearing about this one for 3 years. There's money, well, for longer than that. They're always talking about finding such a place, searching for such a place, bringing in community input to discuss such a place. putting out surveys about what's the best thing to do about that. And also, the City Hall bathrooms are to be reopened to the public during business hours. Well, as I've mentioned many times on this show, they were closed as a political move by the city manager to punish the freedom sleepers who were bringing the public light to bear on the fact that there was and is a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz under specifically the ordinance 6.36010A, which makes it illegal after 11 o'clock at night to sleep outside or in a vehicle on all public property or on much private property. And though that ordinance is not as frequently being enforced, far less frequently, to be honest, instead, this police are using alternate ordinances like park closing ordinances, no trespassing ordinances, stuff that Drew Glover attempted to get the police to provide the documentation on to show, or at least to for the unbiased observer to look at who's getting the most tickets. Is it ever being applied to anyone other than homeless, or how frequently is that happening? How much is it costing? Is it having any impact? How many people are getting repeat tickets? How many people are getting their credit ruined and their driver's licenses taken away? Because of this attempt to provide, to me it seems sort of a crowd-pleasing measure to please the crowd that is concerned with getting rid of visible homelessness in Santa Cruz by getting rid of the visible homeless, not by getting rid of homelessness itself. Tenant protection, you know, this was the big sellout that Justin Cummings, the vice mayor, did. Instead of voting for it and biting the bullet and continuing the freeze, the rent freeze and the just eviction, he let it go and let it expire and betrayed his constituents. And he seems to have no problem with it. Last council meeting, he did do this sort of minor backstep where he and Sandy Brown took actions to open the City Hall bathrooms again after, I say, 3 years of closure. Well, I mean, why the fuck not? I mean, it's ridiculous. But it's also, to me, it was a tourist sort of, well, tourists and business people and people going to City Hall had no bathroom during the day when they were conducting business. And having cleaned away all the homeless people by private security goon squads at the library and at City Hall, there was no need. Plus, they've also instituted a curfew, and we've heard nothing about that curfew from any of these council members publicly. Alan Fisher is not got much to crow about, though he's trying to make to put a positive spin on the city council's accomplishments in terms of including the council members who are under attack, Crone and Glover. He also mentions land use killed the corridor's plan, a development boondoggle abhorred by Eastside residents. And I suppose we can also add to that that the library shoveling under a parking garage has at least been postponed. And then on open government, we have this very weak note that he says that their oral communication is put back on the 7 p.m. agenda so working people can be present and funding secured to televise planning commission meetings. Well, again, big whoop. There's been no extension of oral communications time. Staff takes up the lion's share of everything. The consent agenda has now been not just packed with stuff that the community really doesn't get any time to examine, and even the council members don't get time to examine it. But the city council mayor, who sets the agenda unilaterally, really, I mean, with the benefit of the vice mayor and the staff members, and that's, of course, who runs the city, Martine Bernal, city manager, and the staff members. She does this a week in advance, and she also she insists that any items coming from city council members be in her hands 2 weeks in advance of the city council meeting on which they will appear. It's done privately behind closed doors. The majority of the city council has no input into it other than begging and pleading. And also what Watkins does at city council meetings now, she's taken to if council members pull items off the consent agenda in order to talk about them more fully, she shovels them to the end of the agenda. And members of the public who want to talk about them either have to compress their speaking time into 2 minutes for can be 10 or 15 items total, or they, I guess there's no or. I guess that's what she does. And that hasn't been brought up by city council members in spite of requests that this be done, which they could do. They could bring it up at a council meeting and say, we want to schedule this on the next agenda, and neither Glover nor Crone, to my recollection, and if I'm wrong, I'll apologize, but have done this. They don't use the tools they have. They've been running scared. Now, hopefully, they're going to turn and make some kind of a stand. You might find more information on this, at least from Glover's perspective, by coming to the meeting tomorrow, 5:30 at the City Hall offices. I guess it's office number 10. I think that's the number. Let's take another musical break. And that was another one from Hadestown, When the Chips Are Down. So for all of you musical fans, here's a little something from Wikipedia about Hadestown. The musical tells a version of the ancient Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, where Orpheus goes to the underworld to rescue his fiancée, Eurydice. So in this updated version, Orpheus is a songwriter in the Great Depression and continues to write music, even though Eurydice, his partner, urges him to work so that they can have food and shelter. Hades, who's the head of hell, or the underworld, depending on how you look at it, kind of is looking around for a new consort. He leaves to find someone who'll appreciate the comfort of Hadestown. So he comes across Eurydice and invites her to join him in Hadestown. And she puts her survival first, and that's the song you just heard, When the Chips Are Down. And the other song, Why We Build a Wall, is a song that sort of takes place as Eurydice arrives in Hadestown and is forced to begin work on the wall surrounding it. That was the song, Why We Build the Wall. And you want to hear more about it, you know, read more about it and go online, or maybe I'll tell you more later with more songs. So it's off to the Red Church about 3 or 4 days ago, another Monday there. more stories. This is actually the Monday was the day when the 72-hour notice was over for the beach people. They were supposed to be given 72 hours to vacate to nowhere because there's no place for them to go. It's at least none that the city is providing, either indoors or outdoors. And that enters into a lot of these, or a number of these conversations as well.
So it's September 16th, 2019. On the sidewalk here, we have a man strumming his guitar. Let's listen in.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, and we're listening to the strumming of...
Ricardo. Ricardo Lopez.
Hey, Ricardo. Anything new you want to pass on?
Yeah, the Rangers just went right through there. Tell us all, oh, you got just a few hours to get out, and they're bringing the choppers right through here. They didn't bring chopper one, meaning chopping the weeds or anything, or the trees down, or killing all of the vegetation on the side of the levee. Yeah, you know, you're supposed to leave the vegetation on the side of the levee because it puts the water, makes the water go down the middle of the river, and it'll dig it down deep. If you dig it away from the side of the levee, you know, then the water splits in half. Like, remember how the river usually does? It splits in two, and then it runs down both sides of the levee, and the vegetation that's in there dies in the levee, and then it causes erosion by the roots rotting. Yeah, and
did you explain this to the Parks and Rec Rangers?
You know, they need
to charge for your lesson.
Well, you know, they really didn't seem to know what was actually going on, and it seemed like too, you know, it's not my job to educate them. They're rangers. They're supposed to educate themselves. If I can get this from our little public library down here, all that school, all those studies of all those different California microclimates and different species of cephalopods, you know, didn't they pick up how rivers run down the middle of a levee?
They're, when did this happen, by the way?
This was two or three nights ago. And, yeah, they've been really strange. The other day, two of my friends weren't fighting at all, and they were just sitting around talking, and the police ran up there and said, oh, we had a noise complaint, and they took her away. Yeah.
What time of day or night?
This was, like, in the middle of the afternoon. Everybody was just sitting around.
And this was, where was this?
Right down there on the levee. Right, yeah, they have some idea that, they try and say that you can't sit on the wall on the levee. I think if you look at the minutes of the meeting, when they decide to build the wall on the levee, they built it at a certain height so people could sit there. Yeah, and they're trying to say...
Which side of the river are we talking about?
We're talking on this side, the Santa Cruz side, not the Branca 40. If you think about how it used to look historically, with Santa Cruz was all on this side of the river. And then if you went up the hill a bit, then you ran into the next little village of Branca 40.
Any other reports of ranger or police confrontations or difficulties?
All the time they're coming. They should be out, you know, keeping toilet paper in the freaking Twin Lakes bathrooms and stuff like that. Because if those people from the valley don't have toilet paper, and they're going to go back there and tell everyone, oh, there wasn't any toilet paper in the Twin Lakes. I had to wipe with my hand and wash my hand off and stuff like that.
The sinks are working.
That's going to cost money. That's going to cost Santa Cruz money. Somebody isn't going to come here, buy a tank full of gas, buy a round of hamburgers for the kids and the family or their friends, you know, stay in, listen to some music at night, just because they were chasing around through the weeds for, you know, one or two poor dispossessed people on what is really federal land, you know, since it's a
navigable. Any reports of actual citations in the last week?
Let me see. Somebody got one. Yeah, several people got them. There's so many that you don't even pay attention. They have a quota or something that they're supposed to write, and they don't get a dime out of one of those. They just get to overcrowd the crowded jail facilities or send somebody's stuff to collection that they won't get a dime
Anybody
out of.
Jailed recently that you know about?
Yeah, yeah, but I can't talk about that because her mother's got a lawyer and all that other good stuff, and so I'm not going to be able to comment on that one.
Well, if you hope in the future, you will.
I will.
We've been talking with?
Ricardo.
Of course.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
That's Lopez.
That's right. Ricardo Lopez.
Thanks, Ricardo.
Okay, right on.
Okay, we were interviewed by San Jose Channel 7 News, who absolutely refused to tell us what they were there for. They just asked us.
When was this?
At the beach a week ago, before the night before, strategically, the announcement
just
of the city council. Yeah, just a small coincidence.
Are you still on the beach?
No, of course not. So, like, but they interviewed us to ask us, like, how we felt, which they clipped to one sentence apiece to go with their story they already knew about, which they didn't inform us about.
I gotcha. We've been talking with
Noel and Marty. And the point is that, like, the entire hour-long me reporting on the fact that this town has $10 million, which they have not spent on the homeless solutions, before they complain about a problem, come up with the solution with which you were paid for. You applied for grant money for solutions, but you did not come up with it.
But they got to pay the bureaucrats.
So don't complain. And the point is that they're just going to put it in their back pocket and not apply next year, because this is a dead poor town. So other towns looking at us, because we're normally a forefront in public speaking and positive solutions. Normally a forefront. Cannabis, a forefront. And they know that to be a winning situation. When it comes to putting the money that they applied for in their back pocket, we're aware of you doing that. That's what I'm saying.
It's a great grant-grabbing kind of thing.
If you did not have a solution before you applied for the grant, you ought not to be able to keep it. I am going to request an audit federally that we retract the money.
Right on. And again, Noel, we want to hear more details when you do.
With fines, don't you think?
Of course.
For the time lost of faking it to our federal government that you were ever going to come up with a solution?
Have you been able to move to a spot that's safer, by the way?
Here's the situation on the beach, by the way, is that everybody in their tent were not the people on the sidewalks. The people in the tents, there were cleanup crews who came through with buckets who couldn't find one piece of trash. Go ahead and ask them. We kept the beach so clean of trash. That's a false lie that there was ever any litter. Heckling was only done by sidewalk people who don't have tents. So you still look out by day to see tons of tourists with their tents. So it's just discrimination for the few tents who might be camping there at night, who might still, by the way, be tourists looking at the stars.
Did the police give you places to go?
No. We did receive an outreach who showed up at the same time to take advantage of that. And if you want my opinion on that, we're going to have to cut to an anonymous level because it's so pathetic that I don't want my name attached.
Okay, well, let's cut anonymous here. Hang on. We're now talking to an anonymous individual. Disguise your voice.
Yeah, thank you. There's an outreach level of Salvation Army who can't beg for the proceeds from Salvation Army. They have a gravel lot out on River Camp, which is gated because they refuse to unlock the gate except for once an hour. So you're locked in a tent in full sunlight with all heat on gravel, with no showers and porta potties, which they do not stock with toilet paper.
You speak as a resident or as someone who's visiting?
Now a resident, sadly.
Uh-huh.
This situation is they have had one can opener that's been dull for 6 months. It's costs a dollar at a dollar store, but they don't go get it. They've been, quote-unquote, asking for one from Salvation Army.
Requisitioning?
Unbelievable. One can opener. While they stock food that's in cans that you have to have a can opener to open. There's no refrigeration and there's no showers. It's in full sunlight, in the heat of the sun, on gravel. You're literally an inch away from tent to tent, locked inside a gate, and you're not allowed to leave nor walk except for every hour.
Now, is there much internal organization among the campers? Are they concerned?
There was a mention of calling a meeting. What for? So we have a faction who's receiving a grant based on your name and social security number signing in. They're getting money, but they're not even stocking it with toilet paper or a shower. And you're locked in with no ability. You're not allowed to walk in or out, by the way. They locked it.
So I know. So, anonymous one, let me get your number and name off mic here so I can get in touch with you later.
201.
Wait, wait. with Noel. Go ahead, Noel.
I said it costs a dollar at the dollar store.
You're talking about a can opener, and you've stayed for 4 months. You've tried to get a...
They have. I have not been there for 4 months, but I asked them how long it's been since they've had a working can opener. 4 months.
Well, a can opener is a seriously difficult device to get.
Oh, I know. And apparently Salvation Army has not given them one, although their work orders request one. For 4 months, none of them has sought fit to go to the dollar store and get one. For a dollar.
You're always complaining, aren't you? Yeah. You know, it's a problem. I can see that, Noelle.
Shame. While they put out cans that cannot be opened, except for by a can.
What about your teeth? Have you considered that?
I know. Oh, and we're not allowed knives, so, you know, forget that.
Well, you could cut yourself.
You should just look at the can of tuna and by osmosis receive the protein.
There's an idea. We've been talking with?
Noelle.
Excellent.
Two blocks trying to get here. He's talking about how much more bullying the cops are doing. And the people in this line are saying how it's illegal.
Like, that's what the fellow in front of you just said.
Well, I hadn't even talked to him yet. But.
So he's not spreading a false story. This is a real situation.
This is what I hear people's own. So 7 or 8 people. All guys so far.
Well, I'm sure the CATCH committee will deal with that.
No, we're not a political body. We need you to deal with it.
Oh, I'll rush right out. And we've been talking with...
Lighthouse Linda.
Thanks, Lighthouse Linda. Anything thoughts, Serge? Serge is keeping a closed mouth policy, but you can always sneak a recorder into one of his meetings and get some real wisdom. You have a meeting coming up today, it's not going to matter, but anything happening in the next week we should know about. From Serge that he's going to attempt to get the cash to tell Loudon Nelson to open their bathrooms to get the city council to force that through, even though the cash doesn't report for a while. You just got out of jail, buddy. What's your deal?
I heard the Grinch has been hired by Santa Cruz Police Department, so hide your milk and cookies.
I ain't got no milk and cookies.
Well,
They got chicken and noodles here.
Okay, good.
Take care. Welcome back, man. I want to hear more about what happened to you when you got time.
Anytime you like.
All right. Any reports from the street? No. Any street reports?
Huh?
Any reports from the street?
Not right now.
Did you go to that last homeless committee meeting that they had where there was some kind of presentation?
I went to one of them, and then the next one...
It was last week on Tuesday.
Serge would have gone to. You should talk to him.
Which one?
Member. See the guy in the blue shirt with the earring?
The one right there?
Yeah.
Guy. What did he do?
He's a committee member. Kurt, is he? One of that homeless committee. He'll give you maybe all the details.
Who does he represent?
Himself.
Oh, he's from
he's
the
one of the 12
community?
People on the committee.
Well, there's what?
I think he lives in the van. I think. Reports if you want to pass on for free radio. Hey, Joe, what do you know? Hey there. Any street reports there, Mel?
Lounger across community TV. I see Susie O'Hara, renowned advocate for perpetuating poverty. What's her job?
She's our 8th council member. She's the assistant city manager.
Oh, and we want to be careful and not speak ill of her,
no,
right?
No, certainly not.
Okay, because she has a track record of...
She makes many rosy predictions.
Yeah, that's right. Hypotheticals are her business.
Yeah. Hyperboleticals.
Hyperbolic gas. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm telling you, with straight faces, people still listen.
Oh, not only they listen, they vote, and they thank her for her presentation.
They do.
Including Drew Glover thanks her for her presentation.
I realize what he's trying to salvage for some reason, but no, I mean, you couldn't get more ridiculous a lack of effort on true effectiveness to help people.
Well, this is a highly paid city official you're talking about.
I know that. She's the token, so she gets all the commendations, I guess.
She gets the commendations. She gets the money. She gets the assistance from her staff. And she gets to speak at city council whenever she fucking wants to.
Free labor from do-gooders,
perhaps.
Well, Salvation Army.
So what's the story? Tell me about the Association of Faith Communities parking program. Is it actually being used by people?
I know nothing.
He knows nothing.
It's a tepid response to feed at the public trough. You know, but I don't know.
Well, I understand AOC got, a couple hundred thousand bucks, didn't they?
That was just for that program, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I've not been involved in that at all. And to my knowledge, it hasn't caused any scare or fear or violence or anything negative.
Has it served many people as far as you know?
As far as I know, no.
Because I understand that wasn't there, the very lot next to this church is a large parking lot. Is that being used at all?
Again, I'm staying out of it. I don't.
You don't know.
I don't have anything positive to say.
But anything negative?
Like ignorance.
Do you have anything informative to say?
Yeah, blissful ignorance. Yeah. And anyway, I can testify that the faith community shelter is likewise a tepid response, and not. Not that useful to most people.
Because it does serve 20 people?
Yeah, ideally, yeah. And even there, many factors, but one of them having no transportation, no storage abilities, so you abandon all hope in terms
and
of your
property
personal,
and your hope.
Abandon privacy and abandon come and go as you, as an adult, would ordinarily expect. So
this is the rotating shelter that goes to two different churches.
It's free rent. Yeah,
it is,
and that's not to be overlooked in this town. But you have to work at it. Yeah. Yes, Mike.
That milk you left on the table down there.
I didn't leave it.
Somebody ran off with it.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't leave it. So anyway, yeah, it's frustrating that it isn't more effective. You know, it does offer safety and sleep
for 20 people.
And it educates a small number of people who volunteer from each of the churches to break bread together, sit down, actually have conversations. A much more educational value than what the local newspapers can provide. So, again, minimal, but it's real. It helps.
This has been
some
going on
people.
Since, what, 2013 or something? Or even before? I'm not sure. I know there was
13 is about right. Yeah,
and I mean, I know there was great prediction. Steve Plaich was a big one for predicting that it was going to expand every year, and of course, in fact, as far as I know, that hasn't happened.
Yeah, no, he has a similar view as mine, is that our abilities only reach a fragment of the population that deserves safe sleep. And as much personal responsibility as possible. So, anyway, yeah.
I appreciate that. What I don't appreciate are rosy predictions about its expansion that
I
continually hear
either.
From him. I've heard that for years from him. I don't like it.
Because I don't hear it from him, but I won't question that
You probably would laugh in his face.
I've heard it from other people, though. It's definitely a delusional statement based on current practices.
Well, I noticed at the church here itself, you've been here on the Monday nights, and I notice a somewhat loosening of the rather stringent take that food out and you won't be coming back policies or get that food, don't keep that plate in the building, get off the path, go to the sidewalk. That sort of stuff has been less evident in the last few weeks than in the past. Now, is that a change in policy or just...
Not that I know of, no. But the delivery of the message, and you would know as well as anyone, the urgency.
I would love to get some input from people on other stuff that bothers you guys.
This is Serge speaking.
No more fascism in Santa Cruz.
That would be good.
I got to write that down.
I already did.
Santa Cruz police, brutality, misconduct.
I got you. Serge is urging people to come to his meeting, which happens after the meal at 6:30. Hey, good looking.
Hi.
Moved from the beach, did you?
Well, I was the last tent on the beach, and last night after dark, we were ambushed by probably about 10 to 12 Santa Cruz City police. They came at night with their four-wheelers, almost like our military would invade a foreign safe house or a safe camp. They did that with our people.
Where were you?
Down at the main beach. Hang on.
was first speaking. She's getting some food now, so we'll get back to you in a minute.
Oh. Hi. So after dark, they came and ambushed everybody. And they had sent out a flyer first, warning people that they were coming. The flyer said nobody was allowed to camp on the dry sand. They also said that if your stuff was left, that they would store it for 90 days. So I waited then for the police, you know, to come, because I've got all these things that I can't carry on my back. And so then they threatened ticket and incarceration if you do not leave immediately. So I got my pack, I left the beach, and then I watched from the wharf as they came back around and then kicked my tent to see if there was somebody still in there. And they were kicking it and kicking it, and a man, Dakota, recorded it. He's a totally separate third party, and he was up on, I guess, the beach street, and he recorded it close up, how the police were all, took my tent and kicking it and kicking it. They went in, ransacked through my tent. I went back at 3:30 in the morning, and the tent door had been left open, so it had rained inside my tent, and I moved the tent to the waterfront where they said you could be. And then Channel 8 News came this morning and interviewed me, because I was the last tent on the beach.
I'm sure they'll give every detail that you tell them.
Yes, well, I don't know. But, you know, I really am just here for the people and the rights of these women and the men, too. But we have a lot of young women in their 20s that were out there. And like I told Channel 8, this was the first time they actually had shelter. And the police chief watched from Beach Street all these people he's displacing from shelter and putting them out into the rain, into the into danger. And, you know, I really said, you got to question that kind of morality. And even I told the police, you know, when you're just taking orders, you got to question, you know.
Was this the first time people were displaced, or were they doing it previous nights?
Well, that's one thing I said, that I think that they don't want the people to get rest. They want the people in the bushes and to move from bush to bush to bush to bush so that they're beat down and they get worn down. Because when everybody's sleeping, everybody starts to get human again, right? Everybody, I mean...
That would be wrong.
Here it is. Here they want people to live like animals, and that is wrong.
That way you know they're homeless.
It is really, like I told them, you have 5 high schools graduating kids to the street. So they're making this... This is on the children. They have the rent so high, they know the kids can't afford rent. They hope they get them so sleep deprived they go into the mental health system or the criminal justice system, and they become a slave to the system.
Now, this curfew was passed a week ago. When did the police come and tell you you had to move? In terms of notices, in terms of verbal contact.
Let's see. The notice was dated the 12th. And that they would be there at midnight, you know, a Monday night or Monday morning. And the problem is that the police say, go to the camp up Highway 9.
1220 River.
Right. But the camp, the river camp, has had an outbreak of scabies, and it was in the newspaper. So it is unsafe and unsanitary for any new people to go in there.
Not to mention full.
Right. So they told us, we don't care where you go. You just get out of here. So, and a lot of these police and rangers do not live in Santa Cruz. Or, ironically, they'd be in a tent. They really don't make enough to either not live with their parents or to pay rent here. That's why they live out of town and work here. But you can't come into somebody else's house and kick around their children and keep doing it and get away with it. Eventually, the parents come home.
Unless you're homeless, of course.
Oh, well, you know what? Things are going to turn around, because I believe the justice system's really going to get in trouble, and I believe they get fired.
Tell them about the tickets.
You know, this is the fire season. And really, it's our turn to fall. In the big picture, it's America's turn. We've had every other country's had their fall of their government, and our government's gotten so corrupt that it's our turn.
The poor have always been shafted, and hopefully you... Poor people will turn and make their stand together, but
We'll see if that happens. Have you found a place to camp yourself?
Oh, and the poor people are the closest to God because they have to. They have to rely on the power of the universe every day. And so we have a crew here that is just, they're holy. They're holy people. We just do it one day at a time. You know, we have our, we're guided. You know, we're guided and we've done good work. So we just keep following our intuition and coming from the love side. And,
is there any, have you talked to any of the other folks who have been dislodged from the beach?
Yes, last night, a lot of the people that were sent away from their tents and stuff were all lined up in the doorways of Pacific Ave. So they were all away from everybody at the beach. And then when the police chief takes them out of their safe homes, their safe housing, they're all on Pacific, out in the rain, out in the elements, in the doorways again. And, yeah, really, really sad. You know, mostly I wanted to focus on the children and that Santa Cruz can make the rent whatever they want, but you got to close the high schools. You can't keep doing this to the kids. And that the kids have no money, for defense or a real public defender. And when the public defender's in on the scam, there's no chance for the people. And they don't know that. And that's really treason.
And we've been talking with?
This is Cooper D'Angelo.
Thanks, Cooper. You'll still be doing some nighttime strumming and singing?
Oh, yeah. We sang night before last out on the Ave with Jay, and he's so wonderful. I love him.
Are you still going to be in front of the Palomar, or you got some other place?
Yep, we still sing in front of the Palomar.
How much of your tent were you able to retrieve?
Well, because I could only carry what's on my back, we had to leave it. I mean, you know, when you're there, even if you're in an apartment for 3 weeks or a month, you really usually can't walk out carrying everything that you have.
Oh, dig it. So are you without a tent for tonight?
Yes, we have no shelter, and we probably won't because there's no place to put up a tent. So they know this. And, oh, this is what else I wanted to talk to you about. When I told them that I read their flyer, that they would hold my things for 90 days. I told them I'm a missionary out here, and I'm here to help the people. And I have coolers, and I have blankets, and I have things for the people that I can't carry on my back since they're kicking us out. And I said, do you label my things? How do I know that, you know, that you're putting my name on stuff? And they said, you just go to the property window and describe your belongings. I said, you got to be kidding me. What's to prevent theft from the police?
Or from people picking up your stuff?
Well, yes. Or the people inside property. There's nothing to prevent all these theft going on because all they have to do is tell the people, oh, we can't find it.
Or somebody coming and saying, that's my property and taking it.
Right. Even if you go to a restaurant and a coat check gives you a number that matches your coat. And we have a police department that's that sloppy that they're just stealing people's stuff and not putting anybody's name on anything. And you're just supposed to go and hope that they have some. They've been stealing people's property.
And again, we've been listening to the concerns of...
This is Cooper D'Angelo. Thank you.
Got a ticket?
Right after Channel 8 News came, Phil Gomez, right after he came, within a half an hour, the police arrived. And all they were doing is looking in the tent to see if there was anything they could ticket for. And they were going to the last remaining people, seeing if there was something that they could ticket for. So the one officer said, I see a glass candle. And there, you know, it had a glass candle hold. And she said, you can't have glass at the beach. And so we're going to write you a ticket. And you have a 24-hour stay away.
Ah, how cute. And did you leave immediately or stay?
Well, they, you know, they had four rangers and then one cop. The rangers had no idea a flyer had been given out to the people stating that they would watch their things for 90 days and also stating that you could be on the wet sand. So I'm explaining this to the ranger while he's arguing with me. So he obviously hadn't seen the flyer. So there's one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing.
Or one hand doesn't care what the other hand
is doing. Right, just there to bully. And And he said if I left anything, that he would see that my stuff goes in the dump. That he was not going to honor.
The name of this ranger was?
Gates. S. Gates.
S. Gates. Keep that in mind. So when did this encounter with the rangers happen?
This was right after Channel 8 came, so I want to say about noon.
This is noon yesterday?
Today.
Noon today.
Yeah, and Channel 8 came today.
So you were on the beach today, and so they were trying to drive you off even during the day.
Well, that's when they came and said, you can't be here because now you have a glass candle holder. So you're breaking the rules of the beach, and you're to be a 24-hour stay away. And at the same time, that same cameraman, right on, right there, Dakota, he videoed the whole encounter with myself and the police, giving me the ticket for the candle, having me come out, telling me to stay away, all this stuff. And arguing with me about the actual flyer that I read. They obviously didn't read it.
Did you or anyone you know video it?
Just this man, Dakota. And he's the one that videoed the cops kicking my tent last night as to see if there was a person in it, kicking it and kicking it.
Is he here?
He just walked out, smiled at me and waved.
If you can, get his contact information so I can get in touch with
him. I'll point him out to you. He's really nice, and he's really into the fighting for the people's rights.
Sounds good.
You know, the people are being ambushed by, I was ambushed last night in the dark by 10 cops armed, and I'm an unarmed person, and that's terrorism. That's terrorizing.
Sounds a
and
little
that's
freaky.
What they want to do. They're trying to terrorize.
I think you're right.
We're listening to the thoughts of
Steve Connor.
Why the struggle? Why the strain? Why make trouble? Why make scenes? Why go against the grain? Why swim upstream? It ain't no use. You're bound to lose. What's done is done. That's the way the river runs. So why get wet? Why break a sweat? Why waste your precious breath? Why beat your handsome brow? Nothing changes anyhow.
And that's another from Hadestown, Nothing Changes. Not the most upbeat of songs, and not my theme song, but often that's the way it looks. Back now to the Red Church and further conversations of an either gloomy, enraging, or I guess if you're really optimistic, hopeful kind, in the sense that if abuses are exposed, then maybe there's a chance they can be addressed.
Listening to the thoughts of
Steve Conover.
And Steve, you said something about losing some property last night.
Last night someone, it wasn't related to my story I'm about to tell, but stole my big bag and I had cat food in it. And now someone just dropped off the table, dropped the 24 cans of cat food. So that's wonderful.
I know. I remember the last time I saw you, you were looking for one of your cats. Did you ever find that cat out at Harvey West?
Yeah, she slept on my chest last night.
How long did it take you to find the cat?
About a half hour after you left.
You're a diligent searcher there, Steve.
He's doing pretty well. It's kind of hard for her sometimes because it's a dog's world. Dogs running by all the time. So her life is mostly hiding from people and dogs. But at night, she comes out. She's nocturnal. And she watches out for me all night. Stays up and makes sure no one hurts me, even at a risk of her own life. You know, coyotes could run along.
The name of the cat is?
Katinia. My friend, who's still bedridden in a nursing home, raised her as a kitten in Harvey West Park.
Tell me what happened to you recently.
The reason I wanted to talk today was I most recently had the most degrading, dehumanizing experience of my entire life. And that was simply because I asked... my name on the lottery is coming up for some senior housing, which it did about a month ago. And I asked them, I said, can I stay in the law for 8 days so I can be ready for this interview for the senior housing apartment? Be shaven, fed. We don't have any beds, they said. So I missed that appointment. Lo and behold, I didn't have an alarm clock. So I missed the appointment. Good thing was I was able to call time enough where the that apartment complex to say, well, since you called, the next unit comes up will be your interview for. I don't have to wait another 5 years. You know, I waited 5 years out of the blue. They call them, you know. So I was lucky in that part. The next opening. Okay, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today.
Yahoo!
So I'm trying to take care of a cat, and so I can't go to Salvation Army. I'm 65 years old, sleeping on a sidewalk.
Let's take this outside.
I was saying I missed an apartment. My name came up for lottery. You know what that is. The Housing Authority lottery where your name comes up. You know, you're most likely going to get the unit. But I missed that appointment because, you know, I didn't have a phone. I lost everything I had. So I had no idea what time it was. But I was able to use a payphone and call them. And they said, well, since you called us, the next apartment comes up, you'll be on the lottery for that next. You don't have to wait another 5 years. You know what I'm getting at, kind of thing?
And so what happened?
So now I figure, wait a minute, I'm trying to help a friend who's been bedridden for a year because they don't seem to do anything to help the people, because if they get out, then they don't get their money. It's a for-profit nursing home. And so I don't want to get off into that area right now. But so I'm trying to help her the best I can. I take care of her cat that she raised. It's a kitten for 6 years. The cat can stay with her, in the room at the nursing home. You know, there's a sliding door, can go in and out. Great, that was wonderful news for me. I wanted to bring, that would be wonderful. And bring joy to our life. So then I call them ready to do it, and the nurse says, oh, you can't do that. The cat, you can bring it for maybe a half-hour visit, but cat can't stay here. You know, it's like another bam, depressing thing. So anyway, I'm dealing with that kind of stuff. I'm taking care of the cat, Peter, tonight. You know, I sleep on the sidewalk across from Hardy West Park, because the maintenance guys at Hardy West Park, the city employees, whatever they are, at Hardy West Park, they basically attempted manslaughter. You know, they see a chance to steal your sleeping bag, we'll do it and throw it in a locked dumpster. That's still not the point. So I'm sleeping on the sidewalk across from Hardy West Park, where the cat grew up, so to keep myself out of danger.
When was this?
They might come and kick you in the head if they steal your sleeping gear.
When was this?
What?
This time you were sleeping on the sidewalk.
That's what I do. The last time was last night.
Okay.
So I said, well, wait a minute, maybe it'd be better if I try this loft again. Maybe they got a bad opening. I remember loft from back in the day, and it didn't seem that bad. So I said, I'll try that. At least there I can come out. They got a 10 o'clock curfew. I can come out, feed the cat, spend a few hours with her, and go back in the loft.
You talked about the Pauly loft?
Pauly loft, right. So I go there, and lo and behold, oh, yes, we do have an opening, two beds. So I'm there. Oh, great. But when I get in.
This last night?
It's about 4 nights ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm in. I thought, okay, maybe here I can save some money, get into the car, help the apartment, blah, 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 blah. All these good ideas coming through my head. However, then of this degrading, humiliating fucking the way they treat people there. They got these big, huge security uniform fucking folks. Every time you got to take a leak, say, during the night or when you're there, you got to get up, you got to go to one of these guys. I got to take a leak. And they got to go and they open the thing, men and women, security, big fuckers, like motorcycle gang people. Open up the thing, you know, let you in. You got shit, open it up, let you in. You got a shower, cold water, open up, let you. All the time you got to take a fucking leak, you got to ask them to open the fucking key, open the fucking thing for
you.
Do
they have the shower?
When they have to piss, do they have to get the key?
Do they have the showers operational?
They have showers operational, always cold water. Anyway, ice cold showers.
And that's what I'm talking about, bathrooms right now.
Pissing and shitting. Do they, the security guards, have to ask each other, will you open the key for me and open the door? And they go in and piss, and then, well, does John Forte, that motherfucker, does he have to fucking open it? You get a key from the security guard to open
man
it, take a piss or a shit? Yeah, he's the head of security there, and he needs to get the fuck out of there. So anyway, oh, they treat you like utter fucking piece of shit.
Yo, let me ask you a question.
There, that's the way they treat the homeless inside that gate.
Yeah, so let me ask you,
I've been victimized before this guy's even down.
Hey, Zolly. So the question I have here is
now, you know,
hold it, four nights, wait. 4 nights ago, when you had this experience.
My first night was 4 nights ago. 5 nights ago, maybe, was my first night.
How many nights did you stay there?
One, two, three.
And during that time, I was told that the indoor showers aren't working, but they take you to this shower trailer.
No indoor showers, ice cold water. Again, you have 15 minutes. The security guard has to open up the door for you, close the door, lock it for you in there. 15 minutes later, the shower's up. Incredible view.
And we're talking about the outdoor shower.
We're talking about the lot at the showers at the homeless service center.
Excuse me.
Which treats homeless people
Excuse
utterly
me. Steve, 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 I got
That's
you.
What I'm talking
Steve,
about.
Steve, I understand.
It's really true.
That is what I'm talking
what
about.
What I'm saying, Steve, is are these indoors or outdoors the ones we're talking about right now?
What indoor out? The showers and the pissers and the shitters are outside. They're not inside.
So that's what I was asking.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
It's something like out of Guantanamo Bay. It really is. It felt like I felt like I'd never been arrested for anything here in Santa Cruz. I've been here 40 years, and I felt like I was some kind of terrorist at Guantanamo Bay. Utterly, that's what it felt like being there. The only good thing about it, the food was okay. That was
I had everything else.
Hello, how many meals?
Let me get to the point.
How many meals a day do you
get? You get a breakfast, oatmeal, and dinner at night. Okay. So anyway, that's not the point. So anyway, I'm 3 days of this humiliation. Hold on, Steve. You got to get through this. Help for the cat. Help somebody that's in a nursing home, bedridden, where they don't fucking help people at all. So try to maintain, which I did. Then finally, last night, I said to John, this head of security doesn't seem to do nothing. This walks around, been perpetually living there, taking up a bed that could be used for a homeless person, eating food that could be used for people starving outside the gate, and getting a paycheck for doing absolutely fucking nothing. I said to him, why? He said, why are you so upset? I said, well, do you have to ask one of these guards every time you got to take a piss, open one of them things, close it for you, open one, close it for you, take a shit, open one, close it for you? Do you have to? Oh, no, No, he doesn't. But he takes up a bed. So I said, John, why don't you? He said, there's nothing I can do about it. This is the way it is here. This is the way it is. I said, no, there's something you can do. He said, I'm not going to treat these people like this. That's what I told him. I have the courage to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to treat human beings like this. Don't do that, John. This is, I don't know if you know what I'm talking, John Forte. Oh, I don't know. Well, you gotta get out of here then for the night. So what's he do? It rains last night. 65-year-old. Once again, I'm out on the sidewalk because I protested about the dehumanizing, degrading treatment that the Homeless Service Center fucking does for homeless people. And I told him how dreadful.
I hear you.
The guy that died out on the sidewalk. I saw John stepping over to pick up a little piece of trash. Because of their impact zone.
Okay, Steve, is that it, or do we have anything else you want to add?
What it is, I'm telling you, that place is worse.
You are repeating yourself. Steve, you're repeating yourself. It's important what you're saying, but it loses impact when you keep repeating it.
Okay, it's worse than any Nazi concentration camp film I've ever seen. That's exactly what's going on there at the Homeless Service Center.
So you stayed out in the rain last night?
Yes, I did. Okay. Once again, 65 years old, out on a cold sidewalk with a cat
and
on
tonight,
you,
what do you
because
plan?
Because I said, Steve, why don't you stop Steve? Making this, get rid of this uniform
tonight,
shit.
Tonight, what do you intend to do?
I got to sleep on the sidewalk. With a cat, that's okay. That's what I'll do.
Take care of that cat.
And that face, here, I want this in my will and if I die on the street, I do not want my name used on their fundraising memorial crap.
Very good.
Oh, we can't do it, but that home's staying on the street. But where am I tonight and last night? Right out on the street in the rain.
Thank you, Steve.
And all my belongings taken.
I understand.
I'm not mad at you.
I know.
The day I die, I would see that I know. John Forte.
I know.
He should be a man.
But I want to talk to her now, Steve. Steve.
Sleep on the sidewalk.
Okay, keep turning. And, you know, I got to say, I'm a little bit apologetic for cutting Steve off. Part of it, of course, was my sense that, oh, you know, he's a little too manic here, a little too high volume. And also, there was another person waiting I wanted to talk to. But he kept adding new details to his concerns, however high-pitched and angry was his account. And the anger and the pitch is a part of the account. And my middle-class nervousness or my, I'm in a broadcaster role, and so I don't want to get this sound too extreme, really isn't the point. The point is the voices of these folks that you're hearing. And my apologies to Steve, who did show up at the Huff meeting the next day, and I may be playing some of that and the ongoing adventures of folks who are dealing with this difficult, horrible situation for people who are outside. Now we're talking with you.
Oh, well, hello. I wanted to talk about the shelter over there. It took me 3.5 hours to get a shower, and it was cold. And when
the homeless lack of services.
Yeah, the homeless lack of services.
Showers and, in front of the.
Yeah, and then no one was there to open the door or watch me come down the stairs. And I'm disabled, so
I have a walker with you.
Yeah, I was saying, please, would someone come and help me? But the guy said he was busy doing other things, and he had no time.
Just,
so
just a troubled
but anyway,
person.
No, wait a minute. So then I come out, and it's the hottest day, and I'm trying to find. In the corner, in the shade, I'm over there in the grill part. And some schizophrenic wants to beat the hell out of me with a glass bottle because I talked to a dog. I guess it's related to her. She's mad about So I
take care of Steve.
Anyway, but they steal all my vitamins over there. They go through your purse when you're taking a shower. They don't have washcloths or towels. They go, oh well, we're all out. And then you think, they don't say in your drying or in your coming or so. I guess you're just supposed to use your clothes.
The wind will dry you.
Well, I've used my clothes before because there's appears to be only rags over there, and I've donated 5 washcloths and asked everyone coming to donate $1 washcloth. Why not?
You're here, so. But
I wish the city council would really take my suggestions and all the open places down on the Pacific Garden Mall that you could shove in however much money and get a 20-minute shower, so we'd have other options.
So, how many frequently have you been using these showers? We're talking. Mind if I give Lisa your name here?
I don't really want to go to them again, and I'll use my name here for the sheriff's in case I'm hurt, because this woman's threatened me twice since she threatened me over at the homeless thing. And
my
name is Sherry Peterson, and I'm tired of all of us being treated like we don't count, like we don't matter, like we're not people, like we're not human. I wrote to the president about in Santa Cruz, there's bars around every bathroom, the post office, the churches. What is going on? There's no shelter. The shelters are all, there's 30 beds over there for people with mental illness only, and that's the only people that get inside. They get to stay inside.
The River Street Shelter.
2 weeks. 2 weeks, 2 years they get to stay inside. And the rest of the people can wait forever.
Which shelter are you talking about?
Oh, the River Street. I mean, I would never go over there because there's rampant meth over there, and I don't like methamphetamine, so I don't want to be.
The camp or the shelter?
I'm talking about the shelter and the loft. There's a lot of drugs over there, a lot of heroin over there, a lot of bourbon. I've seen jugs of bourbon, like gallons, in front of the guard who doesn't care that they're over there chugging while they're waiting for the shower.
How long was the shower line when you were there?
It was long, and then about 4 or 5 people jumped and said they were waiting longer than when I got there. You never do know if people are lying. And then people want to get the mail or go walk their dog, and so people are sneaking through. Taking showers.
How many showers are there?
There's 6 showers and only 2 work, because if they use all 6, then the water pressure goes down.
Wow.
So, you know, I went there every day last week, and I went there Friday. I was going to go to the Resurrection Church, but I'm trying to get this apartment I told you about. So how many things can you do at the same time? But I sure want to be clean. You look like a clean lady. Cutie, I'm coming to your house.
He's coming to your house, folks.
What's your name?
To get the shower. So watch out. Hold on to your bathroom.
I'm coming to your house tonight. We're all coming. Here we come.
I'll walk you to the sidewalk so you don't get arrested, madam. And we've been talking with...
Hey, Sherry, Cherie, and I hope you wake up, City Council. Give us some shelter, some bathrooms. Give us a break. Quit picking on people. We need fire pits at the beach. Quit sifting the sand and keep the bathrooms open. It's a simple deal. Keep the bathrooms open. Get real and build a shelter.
Who's this man posting flyers? What's your name, sir?
I'm Jonathan.
Jonathan, I see. Are you illegally posting flyers in different places?
I hope not.
What does this flyer say?
It has to be illegal.
This flyer says obligation to accept shelter.
And then there's a picture of, it looks like 4 guys, yeah. And it says on top of it, homeless prisoners, Dachau concentration camp, July 1938. Surely you're not suggesting there's some link up between these.
Well, as the as was said here by our officials, so the a Trump administration official investigating internment camps in Southern California said, we're not rounding up anyone or anything yet.
Oh, there you are.
Not yet.
You're impatient for a little action, I can see.
Yet.
You can hang out a couple more days.
Yeah, so he says, I don't think there's anything. This is the head of Gavin Newsom's homeless task force, Daryl Steinberg. And it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that living on the streets is not a civil right, that you have to come indoors. How we enforce that, work on that, will be for debate and discussion and a lot of good work announced.
Well, what's your problem here?
It's obligation to accept shelter.
Yeah, well, I mean, any decent person wants a roof over her head.
Yes, with one, and with another 40,000 people in the same.
If necessary, these are emergency times, Jonathan.
Yeah, there actually are. Apparently, Gavin Newsom's calling for a homeless emergency today.
It's an emergency with all these wretched people littering up the streets, for one thing.
And the Trump administration is very concerned about rat vectors and homeless vectors and other vectors that will cause people to lose their legs if they wander around where homeless people live.
Rat vector.
What about the needles?
And there's needles.
What about the needles?
Yeah,
and the feces. What about the feces?
Yeah, in fact, there was a Fox TV.
Needles and feces.
And urine. And you could get like rat vectors or you could get plague. There's medieval diseases that we will get as good Americans, because of people living
this
in the
is getting
streets.
A little too frightening for our children, the audience. So I'm going to have to thank you, Jonathan, for your thoughts and for your public service and urging people to accept the obligation for shelter.
Yeah. So the obligation to accept shelter under proposed right to shelter law. We're going to have a discussion on how our community can stop the forced internment of those who live outside. And that will be on Tuesday, October 1st at 4 o'clock. It's free and everyone's welcome to participate. It's the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
We hope there'll be more than the 12 people who attended last night.
But that was pretty amazing in 2 days.
Is that right?
48 hours.
I didn't recognize most of those folks.
Yeah, 48 hours. We got that. The many people. That's incredible.
And we have been talking with?
Actually, Keith with Food Not Bombs. But my real name is actually, but I won't say it.
I'm not going to say his real
name. But the thing
name.
That's really sad is I've run into, just here at the Little Red Church on at the coffee. Take care, Sheree. Bye-bye.
See you on Wednesday.
Yep.
What about tomorrow?
Well, we'll try to see you tomorrow, but we'll probably keep our eyes closed.
The bathroom thing?
When? Well, no, when, that was two, it was
that
2 weeks ago.
Time.
Oh, okay. So I...
And on Sunday's show, which is 9:30 to probably around 3, although it may involve a flashback, I'll probably be playing some of the brief, wasn't that brief, but it was a small meeting Keith had around this issue of the obligation to take shelter proposals being floated by, I guess, some state commission and perhaps endorsed by Governor Gavin, get rid of the homeless Newsom, formerly the Führer of San Francisco. So you can check out some of that discussions that happened there. And of course, at this October 1st event coming up at, I guess, at 4 or 4:30 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, when Keith returns from his trip to New York City, he's doing some work with the Union of the Homeless there. And we're going to close out the show with a song by Phil Oakes about a man named John Henry Falk, who is a Southern humorist and raconteur, and I'm reading from a New York Times obituary, died in 1990, whose successful libel suit against Aware, Inc. in 1962 broke the stranglehold of McCarthy-era blacklisters on the entertainment industry. He died of cancer at his home in Austin, Texas, at the age of 76. In 1949, Mr. Falk was the host of a radio program in Paterson, New Jersey, when a CBS executive who had heard him tell one of his country tales at a party invited Falk to create a radio program for the network. The show, Johnny's Front Porch, featured stories based on characters he had met in his travels throughout the South. Soon, Mr. Falk, who extended the ingratiating folk philosopher's tradition of Will Rogers, was seen regularly on game shows and other television shows and became an unlikely, if willing, fixture in the New York social circuit. Aware Inc., the organization, was formed in 1953, quote, to combat the communist conspiracy in entertainment communications. The group published the names of entertainment industry figures suspected of having communist ties in pamphlets that were distributed to advertising agencies, network executives, and others. Those named found themselves banned, always without explanation, from employment in the industry. In 1955, prominent CBS News correspondent Charles Collingwood, Mr. Falk, and several other entertainers ran for office in the American Federation of Teacher and Radio Artists on an anti-blacklist slate. Mr. Falk was among 27 on the slate who won seats on the 35-member board. In February 1956, he was enlisted in an AWARE pamphlet, in part because he had once attended a dinner at the United Nations for Andrei A. Gromyko, the Soviet foreign minister. 2 months later, Libby's Frozen Foods withdrew its sponsorship of Johnny's Front Porch. The following September, CBS dismissed him, saying his ratings were poor. In an extraordinary step, Falk sued AWARE and two of its founders, hiring Louis Neiser to plead his case. The case took 6 years to go to trial. During that time, Mr. Falk, unable to find employment as an entertainer, returned to Austin to run a small advertising firm with his first wife and deliver commentaries on a local radio station. The highly publicized trial began in the spring of 1962 and ran for 11 weeks. On June 28th, the jury awarded Mr. Falk a record $3.5 million. A few weeks later, Mr. Falk returned to CBS for a week as a guest on the game show To Tell the Truth, whose host, Abed Collier, had been an outspoken anti-communist and one of the union board members defeated by Mr. Falk and his colleagues 7 years earlier. Because AWARE was virtually insolvent by the end of the trial, Mr. Falk personally received only about $75,000 of the libel award. Though he was seen occasionally on the other networks, he never again worked regularly for CBS. But in October 1975, the network broadcast Fear on Trial, an acclaimed dramatization of the story featuring William Devane as Mr. Falk and George C. Scott as Mr. Neiser. Mr. Falk was a consultant of the project, which is based on his memoir of the case, also called Fear on Trial. And there's more about Falk online if you want to read about him, but here's Phil Oakes singing about him.
I'll tell you the story of John Henry Falk. I'll tell you of his trials and the trouble trail he walked. And I'll tell you of the tyrants, the ones you never see. Murder is the role they play and hatred is their fee. On the TV and the radio, John Henry Falk was known. He talked to many thousands with a mind that was his own. But he could not close his eyes when the list were passed around. So he tried to move the union to tear the blacklist down. His friends, they tried to warn him he was heading for a fall. If he spoke against the blacklist, he had no chance at all. But he laughed away their warnings and he laughed away their fears. For how could lies destroy the work of many honest years? Then slowly, oh so slowly, his life began to change. People would avoid his eyes, his friends were acting strange. And he finally saw the power of the hidden poison pen. When they told him that his job was through, he'd never work again. And he could not believe what his sad eyes had found. He stared in disbelief as his world come tumbling down. And as the noose grew tighter, at last the trap was clear. For every place he turned to go, that list would soon be there. Oh, that list. And is there any bottom to the fears that grow inside? Is there any bottom to the hate that you must hide? And is there any end to your long road of despair? Is there any end to the pain that you must bear? His wife and children trembled, the time was running short, when a man of law got on their side and took them into court. And there upon the stand they could not hide behind their lies, and the cancer of the fascist was displayed before our eyes. Hey, you blacklist, you've seen what you have done. I've seen the men you've ruined and the lives you tried to run. But the one thing that I've found is the only ones you spare are those that do not have a brain or those that do not care. And you men who point your fingers and spread your lies around, you men that left your souls behind to drag us to the ground, you can put my name right down there, I will not try to hide. For if there's one man on the blacklist, I'll be right there by his side. For I'd rather go hungry and beg upon the street than earn my bread on dead men's souls and crawl beneath your feet. And I will not play your haters' game and hate you in return. For it's only through the love of man the blacklist can be burned. For it's only through the love of man the blacklist can be burned.